Coming up on New York Now, an upstate congressman holds his first town hall.
We should be raising taxes on the rich.
Well, you know, that is a convenient response that people have all the time. No,
yeah, it's the obvious response. What's not right about it?
Yeah.
And Andrew Cuomo gets praise from a longtime friend as he makes a post-budget tour of the state.
Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. At long last, it's a state budget.
We'll show you part of the town hall we hosted Thursday night with Republican Congressman John Faso later on in the program. But first, Andrew Cuomo goes on a victory tour of sorts, touting the highlights of the state's spending plan. We're going to show you clips from two of the elements we've talked about the most over the past few weeks, the Raise the Age issue and his free college tuition plan. We'll start with the latter, where he was joined by Hillary Clinton.
Now you give a great Queen's welcome to our inspiration and our champion, Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Back when I was going to college, I came from a middle-class family. You had a pretty good chance to go to college and afford it if your family's income was in what they say is the lower quartile. In other words, the lower 25% of incomes. A lot of hard-working people, a lot of single-parent families. But they had the chance to go because the economics worked in their favor. States made investments. The federal government made investments. Now, it is so much harder. If you're from the lower half of income when it comes to families, that's upside down, my friends. You know, what we need to be doing is throwing open the doors for everybody willing to work and achieve their education.
People who turn on the TV, who read the newspaper, and say, what is going on in this society, in our criminal justice system, that in so many ways are doing injustices? And an injustice is revealed in a way we've never seen before. Eric Garner case, you can watch on a video over and over and over again. It's not somebody telling you the story. It's not secondhand, it's not third hand. It's a video where you see what happened, incident after incident, all across the country. And people saying there is bias and there is discrimination in our criminal justice system. And it is causing minorities pain and grief, and it has for years, and no one's doing anything. And that is the truth. And then you see the Kalief Browder story that galvanizes public opinion. Why? Because it's everything you knew. It's everything you feared. And then here it is in one picture. And people say, I can't believe it. And by the way, it's not Arkansas. It's not some state in the middle of the country you never even visited. It's the state of New York. It's New York City that this is going on. New York City, the progressive capital of the world, the home of diversity, the home of justice, where the NAACP started. The most liberal, most progressive people. And we have the most cruel, the most unjust result you can imagine. So bad they make a movie out of it, because nobody can believe it, right here in New York. And finally, we say today, when I sign that piece of paper, no more. No more. No more. Not in the state of New York. No more.
And finally, the Capital Region got to see a Supreme Court justice for the second consecutive week. Last Tuesday, Sonia Sotomayor was at the University at Albany. This Tuesday, Chief Judge John Roberts spoke at RPI in Troy. Roberts, a historian of the court, as he proved in his speech prior to his sit-down discussion, was asked if today's partisan environment during the confirmation process is dramatically different from years past.
First, I want to point out one thing, that throughout this whole process, the Supreme Court has been quietly going about its business of deciding the cases before it according to the Constitution in a completely nonpartisan way. We've done it for the past 14 months with one vacancy, and we'll do it going into the future now that we have a full complement. It is a real danger that the partisan hostility that people see in the political branches will infect the nonpartisan activity of the judicial branch. It is very difficult, I think, for a member of the public to look at what goes on in confirmation hearings these days, which is a very sharp conflict in political terms, in Democrats and Republicans, and not think that the person who comes out of that process must similarly share that same sort of partisan view of public issues and public life. That's very unfortunate, because we in the judiciary do not do our business in a partisan, ideological manner. The new justice is not a Republican and not a Democrat. He's a member of the Supreme Court. But it's hard for people to understand that when they see the process that leads up to it. The process, I think, has been very partisan at times in the past, but certainly not to the extent it is now. And the debate, or the nature of these partisan hearings, has a very unsavory background. I think Justice Brandeis was the very first justice who was subjected to a hearing, clearly because of anti-Semitic prejudice against his appointment. For a long time, there weren't hearings at all. For a long time, people were just confirmed by acclamation. As recently, in recent times, Justice Scalia was approved, I think it was by a unanimous vote. So that partisanship is a matter of great concern, both because it might affect public perception and because that would thereby undermine the appreciation of the public of the nonpartisan way in which we do our business.
Roberts also gave his views on whether cameras should be allowed in the Supreme Court. You can hear what he had to say about that on our website, nynow.org. Time now to send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who leads our discussion at the Reporters Roundtable.
All right, Matt. Now for some analysis of what happened this week, budget-related and otherwise, I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Josefa Velasquez from Politico New York and from my own paper, The Times Union, Bethany Bump, who covers education issues for us. So, the budget is done. Oh, my goodness.
Finally.
Josefa, you worked down at the Capitol with me. It has been a long couple of weeks. Is it fair to say that the governor really kind of ran the table in this budget and got everything he wanted?
I would think so. I think there were iterations of what he wanted initially, but at the end of the day, he did get his free college tuition in there. He got these superpowers to be able to regulate, or at least have his budget director put forward a plan if, in case, the federal government cuts New York spending. It's not exactly what he initially proposed, but it's some sort of variation on that, which I think is a big win for him. And he was able to basically lead the assembly and lead the discussion and lead the Senate into where exactly he wanted, even though it was late by several days.
The cost-cutting plan in the event of a drop in federal aid, it essentially allows the budget director, in the event of, more than $800 million,
yes.
$850 million
right.
in cuts or a drop in aid from the federal government, the budget director can then make a plan to effectuate these cuts. And then the legislature has the option of offering a counterplan
right.
and agreeing to it. Of course, that works perfectly for Cuomo because Democratic Assembly,
Republican Senate. And they also have 90 days to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's basically leaving them in a really precarious position where they can't do anything unless there's a deadline looming. And even then, sometimes they blow through it, as we saw these past few weeks. So it'll be an interesting experiment if it happens.
Certainly the biggest item that the governor has been touting as he's taken these victory laps around the state is the free, quote unquote, free tuition plan. But there's been some pushback, hasn't there, on what are kind of codicils and catches within the budget language?
There are definitely caveats and requirements to this plan that people might not be fully aware of. And speaking of variations on original plans that Cuomo had, originally he hadn't wanted to have this residency requirement that some Senate Republicans really pushed for. And what that is and what people have been talking about a lot this week is basically this requirement that for every year that you receive this free tuition award, that is the number of years in which you must stay in New York after you graduate. And that has drawn a lot of concern from people who are wondering, like, well, what happens if you get a really great job offer out of state?
In New Jersey, for example.
What happens is that your free tuition that you received over that time period then converts into a student loan that you have to pay back. Now, if you're looking at $6,000 in tuition a year, $6,000-some-odd of tuition a year, that could add up to a $25,000 student loan that you're now on the hook for.
Right. You know, and
there's another provision that I don't think as many people have talked about, but that I've certainly heard a lot of concern about from folks in higher education, which is this requirement that you attend school full-time. So they want you to average 30 credits a year, which is actually a bit more than full-time. Technically, full-time would be 24 credits a year. And, you know, over the years, I've heard from people in higher education who say one of our biggest and fastest growing populations on campus is the quote-unquote non-traditional student. So,
who tend to be economically disadvantaged, right?
They are economically disadvantaged. They are usually parents, single mothers, caregivers, veterans, people who, even if they wanted to attend school full-time, might not necessarily be able to because they have to hold down full-time jobs to pay for their family, to pay for mortgages, car payments, that kind of thing. So.
This budget, the very high profile, a lot of these provisions, including the free tuition plan, have made national news. It, of course, has fueled speculation that the governor is potentially interested in running for the White House in 2020. The governor's response, and I quote, was, ha, 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 ha. I think I've got the number of ha's correct. But that's we're going to hear more and more about that, at least in terms of speculation, right?
Right. And I think in terms of the free college tuition program, he started off his campaign alongside Bernie Sanders. And, you know, this past week we saw him with Hillary Clinton. So it's definitely placated the left and then toned it down and brought it a little more to the center. And this program, even though it has a lot of caveats and an asterisk on it, is getting national play at the end of the day and is launching his profile on a national scale. So it'll be interesting to see the momentum that comes off of this. He's done a lot of big progressive issues in the past.
We haven't even spoken about Raise the Age,
right,
which is another biggie and is seen as, he listed it as one of his finest progressive accomplishments,
right,
putting it up there with same-sex marriage and raising the minimum wage.
Right, and his dad, who is this liberal, you know, icon, he was asked if his dad would be proud of him, and he said, you know, I don't know if he'd be proud of me, but he'd be proud of this budget. So it also comes to the sense of, like, what is there left to do?
That's a very good question. What is there left to do? You know, we've got 2 months before the end of session. How are they going to fill their time?
They could do ethics reform for the umpteenth time.
Oh, you young people. That's wonderful. Bethany, the Capital Region, it seems like, has become a magnet for Supreme Court justices. On a week that began with the swearing-in of a new justice, Neil Gorsuch, you were at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute where Chief Justice John Roberts came and spoke.
Yes, he sat down with Dr. Shirley Ann Jackson, who's the president of RPI, for about an hour, and they touched on a lot of issues, but of course they first dived into the news that has been making headlines over the past several months, actually. And so he addressed the elephant in the room, which is that you know, people want to know if this really messy, bitter partisan process that we've seen play out over the past year, starting with, you know, President Obama putting forth Merrick Garland as a nomination and Republicans refusing to even consider him, and then leading up, of course, to this past month where we saw, you know, the Senate take advantage of the nuclear option. So he, it seemed like he was trying to reassure the crowd that, you know, for all the partisan bitter divide that you've seen sort of dominate the headlines over the past year, we're still working in a way that is above, you know, we have a job to do, and we're really above that partisan ideological divide that you're seeing play out.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Josefa Velazquez. Rest up this weekend. And Bethany Bump from the Times Union. Appreciate it. And now back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. This week's New York Now poll question asks, do you like the governor's new free college tuition plan? Why or why not? Let us know at nynow.org. While you're there, you can watch any of our past programs, plus follow links to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You'll also find a pathway to the Capital Confidential blog run by Casey and his staff. It's also at timesunion.com. All right, Thursday night we hosted a live town hall with Congressman John Faso of the Hudson Valley. The first-term congressman was in the news last month as he voted to move the Republican health care bill on. He also drew the ire of Governor Andrew Cuomo when he co-authored a bill with fellow Republican Chris Collins to shift Medicaid costs from the counties to the state. That would have been a total of $2.3 billion. The congressman has been criticized online for not participating in any public forums. Thursday night presented the first opportunity for many constituents to ask him questions face-to-face. This was a New York Now special edition that aired on the PBS stations in both the Capital Region and the Southern Tier.
Do you support delaying any major tax legislation until the American public has had a chance to review the president's tax returns to rule out conflicts of interest?
No, I don't think that would be a wise thing for us to do. When Mr. Trump was running for election last year, I said everyone, in my view, should release their tax returns. That's what presidential candidates have done for 25 or 30 years, and I think 40, and I think that's what should be done. I absolutely believe that. But he was elected. The public knew he didn't make public his income tax returns, and he was elected. I think the American public made their decision, for better or worse, whether you or I like it or not. That was the decision that they made. So prospectively, I think any candidate for president should be disclosing their income tax returns prospectively. I don't think it would be wise for us to hold up the works on tax reform, because why is tax reform important? Tax reform is important to help grow our economy more. We are growing at about 1.4, 1.6% a year GDP. That is too slow a growth to create the jobs and the opportunity that we need for our fellow citizens, particularly these younger people coming into the workforce. So we need higher economic growth. In upstate New York, people are still fleeing. They're voting with their feet. I can't tell you how many people I've met through the last year and a half, first when I was campaigning, and the last 3 months that have been privileged to hold this office, who've said to me, their biggest problem to them is they're getting taxed out of their home and their kids and grandchildren can't stay here because there aren't the jobs. And that's the biggest problem. So tax reform is a critical piece of getting our economy moving, and it's a heck of a lot important to me than this Washington partisan parlor game back and forth about Trump and his taxes. I just don't think that in and of itself is the most important thing.
When we talked about the ACA repeal earlier, one of the main things that the Republicans, it seemed, were trying to do was have a tax break for very wealthy individuals, because a big difference between the ACA and their bill was this complete loss of all this money that we were raising from people who can afford to put money into the system. You know, if we're worried about the healthcare system costing us money, why would we be pulling all the money out? In other words, that money was being used as to subsidize people in the country who needed healthcare and couldn't afford it. It always seems as though the Republicans are willing to keep money for the rich and let the rest of us just cope. And, you know, So even the tax plan that's coming up, I'm sure what's going to be proposed are huge tax cuts to the people who make over $1 million. You know, there are billionaires in this country who could give us 7/8 of their wealth. They wouldn't be any worse off, and we need money. We are not a poor country, but we act like it.
Yeah. Here's what my approach has been. There are a number of taxes in the ACA that everyone agrees should go. Even Elizabeth Warren wants to eliminate the tax on medical device manufacturers. I mean, it's that unites left and right. The tax you're talking about is the tax on capital gains income for people over $250,000. And the argument is that that tax is not necessarily related to health care, but more precisely, that tax has contributed to a slower economic growth in our economy. So that is the argument. Well, I know you don't. I know you don't buy it.
More to do with who is lobbying our.
No. Yes. No. Yes. No.
Yes. And I'd also like to just say that you've mentioned several times that, you know, the main concern of your constituents are jobs. And
taxes.
And taxes. Have you heard any of that tonight? We want the federal government to do things that we need done.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the people who have gotten so wealthy in the last 50 years in this country need to be holding onto their purse strings so tightly when the country needs things done.
Yeah.
We should be raising taxes on the rich.
Well, you know, that is a... That is a convenient response that people have all the time. No,
it's the obvious response. What's not right about it?
Yeah.
We want you to know how important Planned Parenthood is in our communities, especially in our rural communities where health care options are more limited. Many people rely on Planned Parenthood for their basic health care, and my stepson, who just turned 26, who's no longer on our health care plan, went to Planned Parenthood the other day, and they guided him through the process to sign up for ACA, so my son now has health care. Mm-hmm. And we know that you have stated in the past that defunding Planned Parenthood is not good for your constituents and not good for politics for the Republican Party. However, you did commit to vote yes on the ACA repeal, which would have defunded Planned Parenthood. Will you commit to preserving access to Planned Parenthood by voting no on any effort to defund Planned Parenthood in the future, regardless of what legislation it is attached to?
Well, thank you for the question. You're right. I have I did not support the effort to remove their eligibility for Medicaid funding. It's a very simple question. They receive no funding to pay for abortion. There's no taxpayer money, federal taxpayer money, that goes to pay for abortion. The question was, if someone presents themselves and they're eligible for Medicaid, and you're a provider that is willing to accept Medicaid, and you have licensed people who are providing the services, then if you show up and you're a Medicaid recipient, the provider should be paid for it. It's really a very simple analysis in my view.
The problem is the fact that although I think that we all appreciate your commitment to keeping in things that would discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions, which of course is like my personal thing. The healthcare bill that you absolutely voted yes for does price discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions. And so when you stand here and tell us repeatedly that you will stand with people with pre-existing conditions, and I understand that you fought to have it included, but if we are priced out, that doesn't help us.
You're incorrect. That legislation didn't do that. That what some people have objected to is the concept of age banding, which mm-hmm. says that in the ACA today, you can charge a 60-year-old up to three times what you can charge a 20-year-old. And all of the health actuaries, people who do this for a living, say that age banding is necessary if you want to be able to price premiums low enough for the young, healthy invincibles in their 20s to actually buy insurance. If you don't do that, you will wreck the pools. This is what is happening with the ACA in many parts of the country, where there aren't enough young, healthy people buying in. And that's why you have 6.5 million people paying the fine rather than buying the insurance. And that's why you have 12.5 million people who were exempted from the fine by the HHS. So there is, the problem is, you know, it's, if you think about it in the terms of auto insurance, a 20-year-old male buying auto insurance, you know what? Guess what? They're going to pay a heck of a lot more than a 60-year-old male. Why? Because they have a much higher risk. And the health actuaries say that you need to have some type of age banding, 3-to-1 to 5-to-1, to allow, to make sure that you can price the premiums low enough for the healthy people to get them in the pool.
You can watch the entire town hall on our website, nynow.org. The conversation lasted an hour and a half. Also on the website, you'll find our latest podcast reviewing the town hall. Casey and I are joined by reporters Josefa Velasquez and Bethany Bump, who covered the events. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or wherever you listen to them. They include not only conversations like this one, but our weekly programs and the entire John Faso Town Hall, which is also available.
Ah, 'tis spring. Well, we leave you today with video of Roaring Brook Falls in the Adirondacks living up to its name. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
Always great to see the Adirondacks, but it was a great day to hear them as well this week. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.